Hello everyone, welcome back to the Deep River Rock Belfast City Marathon Getting to the Start Line podcast. My name's Emer and today I'm joined by Dr. Isling Diamond and Health and Safety Manager Paul Scott. Shall we start by telling the listeners a little bit about your roles on the build up to events and on race day? Paul, we'll start with you.
Hey, well, I would be involved really from several months prior to the race. Whenever we'd be looking at the course, we'd be assessing of the roadways and the junctions and what we need, I suppose, principally to separate pedestrian and vehicle traffic. So there'll be meetings probably on a monthly basis, and we'll sort out the various issues and introduce the various control measures, the coning, fencing off areas, etc. Then, coming up to the race in the weeks before it, we'll hold a number of briefing sessions for the stewards. As you know, we've well over 300 stewards involved on the day of the race, and we hold three separate meetings or seminars for them. It's all the same information, it just means that everybody has a range of dates or times they can come, because we appreciate that many are volunteers and have to nip out of work or whatever. So we give the stewards a briefing, and that then populates the stewarding plan for the day. Then on the day of the race, I generally will be at the start area from maybe 7:30, just looking at the setup, etc. But at about 8:15, I then make my way to Ormo Park to the finish area, and that is where the event control room is. So the event control room will involve people from the emergency services, from the PSNI, from the voluntary first aid bodies, and officials from the race, and we monitor the race and what's happening. And if there are changes have to be made, well, then we can speak directly to the police or to the medics, etc., and organise things there.
Okay. Thank you, Paul. Aisling, can you tell us a little bit about your role in the build-up to race day and indeed on race day?
Yeah, sure. So a little bit of a background about me. I'm a consultant in emergency medicine and have been for about 20 years now. So in terms of the year, we start planning from the year preceding the race, and we look at our statistics and our case mix that arrived in for those runners who were injured in the preceding years to try and learn from that. And to build our services and structures around those learning events which will have occurred in the preceding year. Then moving forward, we would follow a similar program to Paul, and we would go out around the actual area where the race is run to try and determine if there are any pinch points or anywhere where we believe runners would find difficulty, so that we can position the medical areas in and around those particular areas to give the runners some support. So that's in the year running leading up to the marathon and half marathon. We also would work fairly closely with the volunteers and other services to ensure that there is a knowledge about the types of injuries and the types of illnesses that may occur during a marathon, because it's an extremely strenuous activity, and thereby we ensure that the provision of healthcare provided not just by the professionals but also by the volunteers and other services and agencies out in the marathon are in keeping with it, the standards. So we hope to improve the profile of the marathon, improve the safety, and that seems to have been successful over the years, as the number of actual people presenting with injuries and illness has decreased. So that's the kind of timetable, if you like, and the structures and services that we develop throughout the year.
Okay, thank you, Aisling. And what other sort of events would you guys be involved in as well as the Belfast City Marathon?
Well, both Aisling and myself would be involved at many of the major events in Northern Ireland, events like the Vital concerts at Boucher Road and the Belsonic concerts, both at Custom House Square and also at Ormond Park. I would be involved with the Royal Ulster Agricultural Show, where we'll have 130,000 people arriving over a four-day period. We've also been involved with things like the boxing, the outdoor boxing events at the National Football Stadium and at the Titanic Slipways. And usually where there's a crowd of people, you'll find us in some shape or form.
So a real range of events there. Paul, you have been involved with the marathon from the very beginning. Can you tell us how it has changed since its first running in 1982?
It has changed radically. Back in the early 80s, Belfast maybe wasn't the same place as it is now, and there were several issues. And I suppose that would be the first thing, but also at that time, there was we couldn't really have ran the marathon without the help of the police. There was a lot of police officers involved in helping us on the route. Now, the traffic on the route was virtually non-existent in the early days. In fact, we started the race at midday rather than at 9 o'clock. It really was like Christmas morning. Places like the Boucher Road were virtually deserted. So that was the first thing. So there was a big police involvement. There was also very little traffic on the road. Now, in many ways, it was less structured than it is now. In recent years, we've incorporated the marathon relay, the walk, the fun run, etc. So it's become a much more complex affair. And we've got to remember that Belfast is one of the few cities in the British Isles, one of the very few that has hosted a marathon since the early 80s right through until, I suppose, the COVID epidemic. And I think it's a measure of the enthusiasm of those involved with the marathon and with the planning. But it has certainly become more structured. Another thing in the early days was that communication arrangements were very poor. In the 80s, there were no mobile phones. And shortwave radios had a very, very limited coverage, maybe 150, 200 metres. So very hard to find out what was happening out on the course. Now, most of the key officials are all on shortwave radio. Virtually everyone is on a mobile phone. And so we can collate the information now at the event headquarters. In Ormond Park. So an awful lot of changes, and we're pleased to see the numbers are still very, very high. And so we must be doing something right.
That's great. Thank you, Paul. It's really interesting to hear how the event has progressed over the years. Aisling, have you any advice for runners on how to avoid injury?
Yeah, so there's a few basic rules. The first thing is start gently and work your way up. And to be aware of your limitations and not to push yourself too hard in the initial phases while you're building your fitness level up and stamina up as you progress through the year. I would also strongly advocate that people don't leave it to the last second to try and train for the marathon. It's just not possible, and it's so risky to conduct yourself like that. The other thing then, I guess, the main thing that we noticed over the years was a decrease in the number of foot and lower limb injuries, and I think that was probably because of a change in footwear. So again, another piece of advice would be to pick whatever trainer you're using and get some advice regarding the best type of footwear and wear that from the beginning, and so that the foot, lower leg and spine can learn, if you like, and adjust the muscle and tone as you progress through the year. The other area is diet. So to try and ensure that you have a very mixed diet and to slowly increase the amount of natural protein that you're eating during the year, and to run with some water. So don't try and do the training exercises without water, because you have to become familiar, and the body has to become familiar while you're training, that it requires water, and how the body and its systems are going to manage during a marathon. The last and probably the most important piece of advice is, if a patron, if a runner feels unwell, regardless of how minor they perceive that illness to be, they should not participate in a marathon, because there have been deaths in other countries. And when we look back, we've realised that the runners had probably minor viral illness in the month to 6 weeks preceding the marathon. So any sort of trivial illness pre-marathon, don't run it. Much better to avoid becoming unwell and try again for the following year. That rule also applies for minor injury. So for example, so any of the runners who would come in injured at the end of the marathon, when we look back and we take good histories from those runners, there's usually an indication that there has been an episode of trivial injury in the weeks leading up to the marathon, and they've tried to run through it. So again, as COVID has shown all of us, your health is much more important than anything else. So just look after yourself in terms of injury, and particularly in terms of illness, regardless of how trivial or unimportant you believe it to be.
Okay. I guess that's why it's so important, Aisling, for runners not to take part on race day if they've felt unwell within the previous 72 hours. That's something we really drive in communications to our runners. So can you just remind them how important that is?
Yeah, so I would actually advocate, if you feel unwell, so for example, if somebody has had a sore throat or a cold in the month preceding a marathon, I would advise that they don't run and defer into the next year. 72 hours before a marathon, we do get people, because they've invested so much time and energy, and they're an enthusiastic, stoical bunch of people. They wanna crack on, but sometimes you have to make fairly hard decisions, and that's one of those hard decisions that, despite having invested so much time and energy and enthusiasm, that you have to call it quits and pull out. But it's absolutely critical. We have had some people who have become extremely unwell at the end of a marathon. And again, when we look back, there's an indication that they have been unwell in the weeks and hours before a marathon.
Okay, thank you, Aisling. That's really helpful for our listeners to hear. Paul and Aisling, thank you so much for joining us today and for your support over the years to the event. And thank you to our listeners. We really hope you've enjoyed it. We'll chat again soon. Thanks.